we're holding at the top of Lama Domodala for the first mission on that Amud. So continuing on the topic of things that you left or that you put in Shulchan Abim, which caused somebody to get injured. We talked about barrels, we talked about water, so now related things. Somebody pours out water in Rosh Hashanah, and somebody else is harmed by that, as we'll talk about in the Gemara, meaning, for example, that we'll talk about, we talked similarly before the other day, about his clothes getting dirty versus him himself slipping, etc. Chayav Nizka, then the person who spilled the water is chayav for the nezek. Another case, if somebody hides thorns of glass, like he puts them inside a wall, which, what kind of wall we'll talk about in the Gemara, or somebody makes a hedge around his property using thorns, so people pass by and stab him and get caught by the thorns, or a fence, a stone fence, let's say, that fell, the bricks from it fell into Rosh Hashanabim, and other people were injured by them, in all those cases, chayav b'nizka, you're chayav in the net.
The one who,
for example, in the case of the thorns or the glass, the Gemara is going to talk about which one is responsible. Actually, is it the one who put them there, or is it maybe the one who tore down the wall, where then he exposed it that now people can? Yeah. We'll get to that. The Gemara starts off. Omer Rav, lo shanu ela didi tanfu keda b'mayim. This that we're saying that you poured water and somebody else got injured or harmed, then your chayev is only if his clothes got dirty with the water. Who asked my potter? But if he himself slipped and got banged up on the ground, then your potter kaka ulamizikatu, because then it's the ground, which is hefker, which belongs to everybody, which injured him. The water was only a groma. We had this concept the other day in the case of the barrel that broke and the water spilled. Rav had said a similar thing, and there we had Shmuel arguing and saying on the contrary that your potter for the clothes that get dirty because it's considered a burr, and a burr is potter for kalim, but you're chayev for the nezek that was caused by slipping on the water. Yeah. And so we discussed over there. It was on. We discussed the other day that it was a matter of basically do we say that a burr, that the definition of a burr is when you made it hefker or not? Okay. Amalei Rav Huna
considered a burr.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, it's considered a burr, but it depends how you look at it. So we said the other day, or that we said on Tochest, Amar Aleph, and Amar Beis, we said that Rav would make a distinction whether you were maskirit or not. If you were maskirit, then it's considered a burr. If you're not maskirit, then you treat it like shur. And a shur, you're chayav for kalim, and again, the water would only be considered a grama, though, if he was actually injured by the water itself. Whereas Shmuel takes the view that regardless of the burr. So Rav Huna asks Rav, what are you telling me, that he should be potter if the guy slipped on the water? Lo yehei ela kirifshay. Why should it be? At the very least, isn't it like a case of somebody who puts fertilizer or mud or whatever in Rosh Hashanah? Later on, we're going to talk in connection with the next Mishnah about that concept. If somebody puts out mud or something else that somebody can slip on in Rosh Hashanah, you're chayev. In this case, you poured water into Rosh Hashanah and it makes mud. You have dirt over there. It makes mud. As a side thing, by the way, speaking of dirt and water and mud, I may have told this story before. I don't remember. The famous Sir Moshe Montefiore, and we know he was a very generous Baal Tzedakah, and people would come to him all the time for assistance. Jews, Lahav Dor Goyim, and he helped them all equally. But one time a Meshumad came, and he refused to see him. I asked him why. Regardless, you consider him a Jew, he's a Jew. If you consider him a Goy, he's a Goy. You help both. Something like this. We know that in the Torah, the Jewish people are compared to dust. We know in a few places in Tanakh, the Goyim are compared to water. Okay, dirt by itself is useful stuff. Water by itself is useful stuff. When you mix them together and you have mud, I don't want mud in my house. So if you put mud out there and somebody slips on it, you would surely be chayev. Why should this be any different? You poured water over there. So the answer is, misabrit like tamu maya. You think we're talking about that the water didn't evaporate, that the water is packed still there and it made a mud puddle? No, we're talking about vidatamu maya. We're actually talking about the case where the water was absorbed into the ground, or there's no mud per se, there's just a little wetness on the ground. So now, and that's what it's both got dirty with. It's not really mud, per se.
It's water.
It's mostly dried up. It's mostly evaporated. There's a little bit of wetness left, which can still damage your clothes. Tosfos talks about that maybe actually it should be the other. Tosfos discusses the possibility, and there are some Rishonim who have this Gersa, that maybe it's the other way around. That if you argue that Tamu Maya, that the water is completely absorbed into the dust, and therefore you have mud over there, then that would be one thing. But I'm assuming the like Tamu Maya, you actually have an actual puddle of water over there. So you don't have mud per se; you have a puddle of water on the ground, as opposed to where it got absorbed into the dirt and became mud. Anyway, so therefore, according to the Girsa that we have in front of us, there's no mud. And according to the second Girsa, also according to Tosfos' Girsa, also there's no mud because it's a puddle of water. So therefore, you can't compare it to a case of putting mud out versus it out. Okay, well then the question is, according to Rav, why does the mission have to repeat? We already had the other day the case, for that matter, I guess the question could be according to Shmuel as well. We had the case of the barrel breaks and the water spills in Rishus Adabim. What happens if somebody slips on the water? We have our mission of saying if you poured out water in Rishus Adabim, it amounts to the same thing. Why repeat it? The answer is Chodorim. It's a Cham of a Chodorim Motek Shaman, because one Mishnah is talking about during the summer and one is talking during the winter. Namely, during the summer, we learned briefly in the first Perek that during the summer, when the roads generally are dry, because it doesn't rain in Eretz Yisrael in the summertime, and then in those parts of the world in the summertime, you have no right to pour out your water in the Rishus Adabim. And if you do, then there's no question that you're going to be chayav for what happened afterwards. During the wintertime, it's raining, the roads are muddy anyway. At some point, you have to clean out your cisterns or your sewers or what have you. So you're allowed to. You have permission then to pour your dirty water out into Rishus Adabim. That's not making it any worse than it was. Nevertheless, if somebody was nizik by your water that you spilled out there, you are going to be chayav.
In winter.
In winter, even. Yeah. So
what's the difference? That you're always chayav.
That's the point. During the summertime, you have no right to put it out there in the first place.
Yeah.
During the wintertime, you have the right to put it out there, but you're still responsible for anything that happens.
So why?
Therefore, that's why we have. That's why we have two cases. So the previous case was talking about, let's say, when you had the previous case was talking about that you had no right to be spilling water in Rishus Adabim. How did your water come to be in Rishus Adabim? Because it was an accident. You dropped your barrel, you tripped, or what have you, and the water broke. Our Mishnah, which says Hashoyfich Mayim Rishus Adabim, that you poured water into, you actually poured water into Rishus Adabim. Well, what are you doing pouring water into Rishus Adabim? Because during the winter, you have a right to pour water into Rishus Adabim. Nevertheless, if Chuzak Behanacher, you're still going to be chayav for what happened. That would be why the Mishnah is repeating it. The Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, Kol Eilu She'omru Poiskin B'Beisehen, all the cases where we say that people are allowed to open up their sewers, the Gofen Marisehen, or to rake out, to dig out their caves where they stored water, so that after a while the water gets dirty, muddy, whatever, every so often you have to clean them out so you can refill them properly. During the summer, you have no permission to do that at all, and even if nobody is nizik, based and finds out that you did it, there's going to be consequences. During the winter, you have rishus to do these things because the roads are muddy anyhow. You're not really making it any worse. Nevertheless, if a hezek was caused by it, you are going to be responsible.
In other words, we told you could have saw differently in winter.
Yes.
And the two cases becoming.
And therefore, that even during the winter, yes. Yes. So the Mishnah is implying what the Braita tells us more explicitly. The Mishnah continued, that if somebody hid thorns of glass in a wall, so we said he's going to be chayav. But first we're going to deal.
But he's asking if
the moitav shomim, you have the right to put it out, you still chayav for the nezakin. How much more so if you did it in the summer, where you don't even have the right to put it out in the first place? But on the other hand, you could argue that in this case, you deliberately poured it out. The previous case, after all, you didn't deliberately put the water there. You tripped and your barrel broke. So granted, it's Yimoy Tachama, you had no right to deliberately put water there. On the other hand, maybe you have something else to the good, the fact that it was an accident in the first place.
That's true. Well, that
therefore, we need both cases. Yeah.
We need both cases.
One to tell you that even if it was an accident, at a time when you otherwise don't have permission to do it, then you're still chayiv.
Right.
And our case, that even you did it deliberately at a time when you have rishus. Yeah.
But deliberately, what's the...
Because you did it when you had rishus. Because you did it during the winter, when you have rishus, when Beis Din gives you...
That's the point.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so the Mishnah had said that had mentioned this case of thorns and glass, and then it had continued with another case.
You're implying that if you didn't do it purposely in winter, you would be puter?
No, you'd be chayiv no matter what. The point is, regardless, whether it was by accident or on purpose, if you left the water over there and didn't take care to clean it up, or regardless whether you had permission to or not, in all cases, nezek that was caused by your water, you're going to be chayiv. What the exact nezek is that you're going to be chayiv, that was Rav versus Shmuel, whether you're chayiv for the person's clothes getting dirty, but putter for him slipping, or vice versa. Okay, so now the Mishnah has said that the Mishnah has mentioned the case where you hid thorns of glass in a wall, and then the Mishnah continued with another case where you made a hedge out of thorns. So first the Gemara is going to deal with that, and then go back to the case of the thorns and glass in the wall. So I'm asking the case of Chula. That's why you have the Bechula here in parenthesis, by the way, because a lot of times the caption in the Gemara doesn't necessarily refer to the actual words that we're going to be discussing. The Bechula implies the Mishnah continues with another case, which is what we're going to be discussing now. So, Amar Rav Yochanan, as we said yesterday, Loshanu Ela Makriach, this only applies if you made that the thorns stick out into Rishos HaRabim, so you put the head exactly by the edge of your property, and therefore the thorns stick out into Rishos HaRabim, then you're chayev. But if you recessed it into your property and the thorns stick out from there, then it's okay. My time of falter. Why indeed would you be falter? It's not normal for people when they walk to brush against the wall. Normally people walk a little bit away from the wall. Therefore, so you built the hedge over here and it sticks out, the thorns stick out until here, but the edge of Rishos HaRabim is here. So fine, let people walk by the edge of Rishos HaRabim. There's no reason for them to be walking.
So I think it's clear.
That's the point, in other words. So
what did you ask?
No, because the fact is, the thorns, you recessed it a foot or so into your property, but the thorns still stick out into that 1 foot.
Into the
Rishos HaRabim. They stick out 1 foot closer to Rishos HaRabim. If there weren't thorns there, people might be walking in that area, but the point is people don't walk within a couple of inches of the wall anyway. People walk a little bit away from the wall, enough that, therefore, so if they walk too close, that's their problem.
But it's irrelevant, because even if they walk further, they're in Hufa Shus.
He wasn't totally masculine in the sense now officially part of Rishos HaRabim. Practically speaking, if he recessed the hedge into his reshus, practically speaking, he's allowing that people are going to be walking in that area.
But it's still his reshus.
But that's the point. Because, that we discussed yesterday, is it because Bori Rishos HaRabim, is it Makir Nezakov or not? And we said that no, it's a different issue. It's sticking out towards Rishos HaRabim, but because Ein Dafkan Shom Rabim is Chakav Salim, we expect that people are going to be walking within the Rishos HaRabim. And if they walk any closer, even though ordinarily if there hadn't been a hedge there, they might. But even hedge or not, people are not going to walk right next to the wall. Therefore, if someone stick out an inch from the wall, then you're fucked.
I understand that they would walk close to the wall. But let's say they do. What difference would it be? Because it's in his reshus.
But it doesn't matter because
he
would be higher because the place with, on the face of it. Well, that's what we discussed yesterday, whether it's a matter of makir nezakov or not. In the end, we said that Rabbi Yochanan says that actually, regardless, even if you're makir, you're nezakin, you're still higher. So even if you're makir, those thorns. That's the point. It doesn't matter, according to Rabbi Yochanan, whether you're makir or not.
Either way, in his reshus, he would be higher with a recess.
No, if it's recessed or not, because Ein Dafkan Shom Rabim is Chakas
L'Tzolim. That's what I don't understand.
However, for example, you might be chayav for damage that's caused to animals by it, because animals do normally rub against the wall.
He's reshus and he's
But it's an area that he made available to Bnei Rishos HaRabim to walk in. It's the equivalent of Hifkir Rishus HaRabim or Hifkir Boyer.
Then you could say if he cut it 50% of his, in his reshus, 50% away from, they could also go and walk
yeah,
in.
Yeah, and therefore, so yeah.
Reasonable.
Okay. That's what we're saying over here. That if he recessed it a bit, then enough that the thorns are not actually sticking out into Rishos HaRabim, then he halts her for any nizakin that happened because of it.
Because of the
reason that people don't rub against the wall.
Right, that's what
okay.
I'm
okay. Okay. Going back to the thorns in the glass. Turn it up. If somebody hides his thorns or his glass in somebody else's wall, the person who owns the wall came and tore down his wall, and the thorns or the glass fell into Rishos HaRabim and caused damage. The person who hid them in there is going to be chayev. However, Amar Rav Yochanan, Lo Yishonu Ela B'Kotzo Ro'uah. That is only talking about if the wall was shaky in the first place, where then the person who put the thorns in there should have realized this wall is soon going to be coming down. Either it's going to collapse on its own, or the owner of it is going to tear it down to rebuild it. Avo B'Kotzo Bori, but if it was a normal, sturdy wall, on the contrary, the one who put the thorns there is potter because he figured they're going to be safe there. The one who owns the wall is going to be chayev because when he found that there were thorns in there, he should have gotten rid of them. He should have gotten rid of them. Don't leave them out in Rosh Hashanah Abim for somebody to trip over. Yes, that's what we're talking about. They tore down his wall, and the thorns fell into Rosh Hashanah Abim, and they caused damage. Tosfos discusses on the face of it. So even what about the case where the wall was shaky? Why are you only being the chayav of the guy who put the thorns there? Shouldn't the owner of the wall share some responsibility as well? Because for all we know, the thorns were put there 10 years ago when the wall was still solid. So how can you be the chayav of the matzniyah now when you don't know? The answer is Tosfos says because the fact of the matter is the matzniyah having put them in a shaky wall was being careless. Based on this, then we can learn another din. Suppose that somebody takes somebody else's bucket and uses it to cover somebody's pit. So you have Reuven dug a pit in Rosh Hashanah Abim, which is a burger Rosh Hashanah Abim, which he should be chayav on. Shimon then took Levi's bucket and used it to cover the pit. Later on, Levi comes and takes his bucket. Chayev Balabur, the one who originally dug the bur, Reuben, is going to be chayev for any damage that's caused thereafter by the bur.
Because
he didn't fill it or put a proper cover on it of his own. The point is, Rashi says, what's the comparison? The same way as we're saying, when you put these thorns into the wall, the thorns constitute a bur, or eventually they're going to constitute a bur when they fall out. If you put them in a shaky wall, and we're saying the one who owned the wall tore it down, we're not making the one who tore down the wall chayev. We're making the one who put the thorns there chayev. Because he should have realized the other guy's going to tear down his wall. The same way, when Reuben dug a pit, and now somebody else's Levi's bucket is used to cover it, Reuben should have realized that whoever owns this bucket is going to end up taking it. I can't consider that a proper cover. Wants his pshita. Isn't that obvious? Okay, what's Ravina's pshita?
Let me ask the question. Before he removes the bucket, someone trips in the bucket and it hurts, who would be responsible?
Well, let's see. I mean, the bucket itself, if the bucket is something that you could trip over, I mean, then I guess that itself would be a burr. I mean, Bapashtos, I would assume that he probably put the bucket in like this, not upside down. He probably put it in. He put it in upside down so that the top end of it, the top edge of it, is flush with the top of the burr.
I'm asking if he put it in depth. Who is higher, the owner of the burr who didn't fill it up, or the owner of the bucket who left it empty from outside? Instead of pouring it the other way.
It's a good question. I don't know. I mean, you might argue in that case that maybe tackle both. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Tackle a good question. I don't know. Okay. Anyway, the question is pshita. Well, isn't that obvious? I mean, the case of the bucket is exactly the case of the thorns on the wall. What is Rava telling us anything different? The answer is Maratama Hosam who delay have a yodilay, deloide. The difference is that in the case of the wall, the one who owns the wall, when he tears it down, has no way of knowing who put these thorns there. It might have been a day ago, it might have been a week, and he has no way of knowing who it was. So it's not like he can come and inform him, I'm tearing down my wall, come take your thorns because I don't want to be responsible for them. Aval Hocha, but in the case of the bucket, the Yodaleh, on the face of it, when Reuven comes and finds the burr covered with Levi's bucket, he knows it's Levi's bucket. on the face of it, the other way around. Levi knows that this burr belongs to Reuben. He knows his bucket is being used to cover the burr. Unlike the owner of the wall, who has no idea even that there are even thorns in there, or even when he finds them, he doesn't know who the thorns originally were placed by. Here, Levi knows whose burr he's covering. Avalela Adui, you would think maybe he's responsible to inform Reuben before he takes his bucket. Kamash Malon, that's why we're saying that not. Even in that case, he doesn't. So the case of the bucket is going beyond the case of the wall. Not only where you don't know who put the hezek over there, but even when you do know, you're entitled to take your thing and you don't have to check with him first to make sure that the hezek no longer exists.
Without asking, because it's your bucket.
Yeah. Right. It's your wall. Tear down it. Tananabon. Chassidim Rishonim, how you must name Kotisem, Sukhiyasem, Besesadetan, the early Chassidim used to bury their thorns or their broken pieces of glass in their fields, in their own fields, or Ma'amikin Lahem Gimel Tfachim, they would bury them at least 3 Tfachim deep, Kadesh La Ya'akav Amachresha, in order that it doesn't, when they plow their field, that it doesn't interfere with the plowing. Actually, the Rishonim puts it a little differently, not so much that it doesn't interfere with the plowing, but so that the plowing doesn't bring them right back up. Normally, the depth that they plowed fields to in those days usually was 3 tefachim, which comes up in a lot of different areas in Shas.
It could stay with growth, perhaps whatever. It's
maybe, but they're not worried about that. I mean, a field usually anyway means a field of grain or beans or what have you. Those are things that don't have particularly deep roots. But whatever, the point is they buried it deeply enough that later on when they're plowing, the plow doesn't just bring them right back up and screw them all over the place.
You heard about
they
just
found
a
landfill
in
Yerushalayim. Okay. 2,000
year landfill.
Okay. Interesting. And
all the Korbanos.
They didn't put the ashes of Korbanos in Nachal Kidron.
Oh, the ashes.
Everything, I don't know. The Gemara mentions in Yuma and one or two other places that the blood of the Korbanos that drained from the Mizeah would go out in Nachal Kidron. I don't think it says anything about the bones or the bones, everything that was left after the burning would be taken to the Beis Hadeshen, which is north of Yerushalayim, the neighborhood nowadays called Beis Yisrael. It's in that area. Okay, I don't know. Anyway. Okay. Rav Sheshes Shodil Rubinura, some other things of what Amoraim would do with their dangerous things, like thorns of glass. Rav Sheshes would throw them in the fire, that way they get burnt up and they're not a hazard to anybody. Rava shod yibahu b'diglas, and Rava would throw them into the diglas of the Chidekel River, the big, deep river. They'll sink to the bottom. They're not. The Tigris.
It would sink to the bottom.
Yeah, it runs on the east side of Iraq. But it was this is in Rava we're talking about. So like this, it sinks to the bottom over there, and then that's it. It's gone. The Chida has an interesting drasha on these words. He says thorns can represent the digus that a person has, the concern, the worries that a person has about parnasa, about whatever in life. Glass, which is shiny, like a person is pricked with worries, that's the thorn. Glass, which is shiny, represents like the reputation that a person has, like everybody knows he's a great person or whatever. Those kinds of things can tend to interfere with the plowing, as in getting into learning and then plowing the fields of Gemara and the fields of your personality. What do you do to avoid that? The Chassidim are showing them word when they're plagued with thoughts like that. They'd go and bury it in their field, meaning their field again, the field representing Gemara. They'd fatifzich in their learning in order to distract, this way, if they get distracted by their worries or by the fact, look what a great person I am, everybody knows about me. They'd fatifzich in their learning to avoid that. What happens now, on the other hand, not that doesn't always work, he continues. Sometimes, instead, what you need to do is don't continue with the style of learning you used to until now. Try a different style of learning for a while, and that will unsettle you enough that'll help temporarily get rid of such thoughts. So therefore, Rav Sheshes, who was famous for being a baki, for his expertise, he was more into broad knowledge rather than deep pilpul type knowledge. So he would, when it says throw him in fire, means that he would get into a fiery pilpul in order to. And Rava, who was known for his ear, and Habayah Sabayah Rava, would instead throw them into the river representing Agadza. Like he'd take a break from his deep halacha analysis and whatever, and then learn a little Agadza, again, you know, it being something that he's not as used to, and that way distract himself from these kinds of things. Yeah.
Right.
continues the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Hai Man Deboil, since we mentioned the Chassidim Rishonim used to do this, so Rabbi Yehuda says, Hai Man Deboil Mevi Chassidah, somebody who wants to be a Chassid, L'kayim Milad Nizikin, he should fulfill the Dinim of Nizikin, like this one, the various other ones, specifically actually in Shulchan Aruch, and then No. Nizikin is in general the three bavos, but specifically actually in Shulchan Aruch the Smer points out that there's a few specific areas of Nizikin that it's referring to. Things like here we're talking about avoiding causing other people hezek, Hashavas Aveda that it talks about in Bava Metzia, a couple of other things of that nature. He says,
should put in close to the
Arhanda. Rava Amavila Rava says that to be a chassid, you have to fulfill what it says in Avos. Actually, the Ben Yoyada says maybe it doesn't mean Pirkei Avos, but rather it means the way that we find the Avos. But Rami Yaakov talk to people. They always talk with Derech Eretz, even when these people are at a much lower level than them, that sort of thing.
The
pshat is that means Pirkei Avos. Half the sichas that you can find, half the other sichas that you can find on Pirkei Avos point out this fact that based on the Gemara, we see that Pirkei Avos is Milu de Chassidusa, and many times the Rebbe will talk about on the face of it. You have statements in Pirkei Avos that seem to be plain black letter halacha. Hevei Zorah B'Kriyash Ma'avatrila, for example. What kind of Milu de Chassidusa is that? Basic halacha, you got to be careful with it. And those kinds of things. But there was all based on this one line over here, yeah. But Amilam, Milu de Brachas, others say a third thing you need to be a chassid is to be careful with dinim of brachas, which includes, one of the Mepharshim says, an interesting idea, doesn't mean to say brachas, again, that's basic halacha, that's not being a chassid. It means, for example, we know that a lot of times when you have a suffix on a bracha, you can say shakol. Don't do that. To be a chassid, know what the actual bracha, check what the actual bracha should be, and do the proper thing. So why dafka these three things? Nizikin, Ovis, and brachas. There's a vast number of explanations why after these three, one of them is the idea that everyone's talked about, the idea of Zikin is sur mera, make sure to stay away from evil, from harming other people. Brachos is vasei toiv, or no, ovis rather is vasei toiv, because it's full of advice of the positive things to do, and brachos is bringing down a lakus into the world, because that's what a bracha accomplishes. Yeah. There's an idea that there's mitzvahs bein adam l'makom, there's bein adam l'chaveira, and then there's a person's own character development of themselves. So these three things, nizikin represents bein adam l'chaveira, avos represents the person's own character development, and brachos represents bein adam l'makom.
Where did you read that?
I think Marshal said Maral and Marshal say somewhat some things along those lines. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Anybody?
Mishnah says, "Hamotzias tivne v'kashi l'shusad avim l'zbolim." If somebody takes out his tevin or kash, tevin and kash are both parts of the stalks of wheat. Tosfos explains in a number of places in Shas that tevin is the part. That tevin is the part that gets harvested along with the wheat, so it's cut off from the ground, the higher part, and kash is the part that remains attached to the ground, the stubble that remains in the field after you've done the harvest. Anyway, eventually, even that stubble you collect. We've been in Parashat Shemot, that Lakoshish Kash Lateven, that the people are going around to gather the stubble from the field. Parashat is saying, I'm not going to give you straw anymore, you have to go collect your own. So they're going around to the field to find the remaining stubble that they can use.
Right,
in the
today, today we don't.
It's the same principle, though, that the cash is what remains attached to the ground, and Tevin is what gets harvested. Either way, eventually, both of those are very useful for a lot of purposes, one of them being they can be used for fertilizer. That eventually, after they decay, they're good for fertilizer. So if somebody takes them out to Rishosarabim, Lizvolim, in order to make fertilizer out of them, so that they'll rot there in Rishosarabim, and then devil means fertilizer. But who's a behenacher, and somebody else was injured by them, let's say by slipping on them, chayev benizka, then you're chayev by the net, you're chayev for the net. And b'cholakoyde behen zacha, and anybody who gets to them first is zoyche in them, meaning basically, it means that they're hefker, but when we're talking about in the Gemara, the specifics, what exactly is hefker about them? The straw or stubble that was put out. Kolakoyde, whoever gets there first, whoever gets to them first. Yeah. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, Kolam Kalkun Rishosad Abim Vizik. Anybody who makes Rishosad Abim less usable, basically, the Hiziku, and they cause damage by that. Chayav and l'shalom, and they're chayav to pay. And anybody who gets these things that were put out there that are causing the hazard first is zoche in them.
We're not talking about nezek. He was destroying the Rosh Hashanah.
No, destroying the Rosh Hashanah, meaning making the Rosh Hashanah more. No, make, meaning making Rosh Hashanah more hazardous. Mekalkel and Rosh Hashanah means making it more hazardous. So he's chayev for anything that happens. No, any hezek that's caused by that, he's going to be chayev for. Well, so the point is, so Rashi says that we're going to talk about it in the Gemara. But Rashi says two explanations. One is, first of all, we're going to talk about in the Gemara, when we say kol hakodim behem zacha, there's two ways of looking at it. You can look at it. You can look at it that the actual straw itself belongs to whoever takes it first, or you could argue the shvach of them. The whole point is, you put out the straw in Chesed Avim, it increases in value by the fact that people are stepping on it, and therefore that makes it rot faster and then become more useful as fertilizer. You could argue maybe only that shvach belongs to whoever takes it first. So let's say the straw you put out the straw, which originally when you put it out it was $1 a pound. After it gets trampled on and trodden on, whatever, it's worth $2 a pound, let's say, so $2.50 actually, let's say, in order to we have different numbers. So now if somebody picks it up, is he entitled to keep the whole thing? Or maybe he's entitled, he has this straw, he has this rotted straw now, which he can use for fertilizer. However, he has to reimburse the guy who put out the straw, he has to reimburse him $1 per pound for it, let's say, for the original dollar that it was worth then. So one possibility, Rashi says, is then that the Tanakhama on the face of it is only talking about the shvach, and Rav Shimon Gamliel comes to say, not only the shvach you forfeit, but even the straw itself. That's one. And then Rashi says another possibility is that even oisin birshus, even if you have permission, for example, we talked about earlier on the Amud that during wintertime you have permission to pour your dirty water into Rosh Hashanah. We're going to see in the Gemara, Rabbi Yehuda is going to say something similar, that there's certain times of year when you're entitled to put out certain things in Rosh Hashanah. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel would be saying, even if he did it very shush, if it caused a hezek, that's it, you forfeited it. Okay, continue.
Well, maybe
the shvach, or maybe even the whole thing. Yeah, that's it. Another case, if somebody is turning over or taking along a golol, a piece of dung, in Rosh Hashanah, and somebody else is damaged by it, chayvin is good, then again he's chayvin the hezek. We discussed yesterday what hoifach as a golol means. Does it mean he actually lifted it up from one place to another? Does it mean maybe Rebbe Lazar said maybe it means he's rolling it along, et cetera, yeah.
Less than three tefachim away
because more than, yeah. No, the less than three tefachim that we were talking about was actually in connection with Rebbe Lazar had said, if you put it back, not Rebbe Lazar said, we started by saying first that if you put it back, then you're not chayav for anything. Here we're not getting into all of that. So whatever it is, you are moving around this gaul. It caused damage. You're going to be chayav. Yeah, we said yesterday that there may be certain cases where you're not chayav because you were. Rebbe Lazar said that in certain cases you weren't zoche in it and you didn't move. You picked it up less than three tefachim and you didn't move it three tefachim and then you put it back. Then you may tackle the puzzle. Okay. Three more sorts of lema masnisin b'loik Rabbi Yehuda. Do we have to say that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda? The part about the scroll that you put out in Shulchan Aruch. The Tanya, because you learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda, b'shachay tzach tzvalim, when it comes to the time of year when people normally put out plant matter to become fertilizer, the difference, by the way, I mean, in modern Hebrew, they use zevel to mean garbage in general, but in the Gemara, the distinction is zevel means fertilizer, and here we're talking about, for example, that you take straw or leaves or what have you, and put them out in a shesanabim, which eventually will be trodden on and turned into fertilizer, as opposed to golol is dung, is animal waste, animal dung, which is already natural fertilizer by itself. So, the shasai tzavz volim, when it comes to the time of year when people usually put out their stuff to be compost, well, for compost, you could put it in modern terms, so they put out their plant material to be composted. A person is taka allowed to take out this compost to Rosh Hashanah. I mean, you can pile it there for up to 30 days. This way it'll get trodden on and stepped on by people and by animals, which will help it rot faster and therefore turn into more effective fertilizer. And you're allowed to do that. Shalmanat came in for Yeshua. As a matter of fact, it's on condition of such things that Yeshua bequeathed, didn't belong to him, or whatever. When he settled the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael, and then each shevet was assigned territory and so forth, there were a number of conditions that he made that the certain things that you would think otherwise people would not be allowed to do, but he and his base then made these conditions that these things should be allowed. Later on in the Masechta, this is one of them. Later on in the Masechta, towards the end of near the end of the seventh parak, we're going to have a list of 10 such tanoim that Yeshua made, and then there's a couple of tanoim who mention other ones. We're going to mention this one of Rabbi Yehuda's there also. But there's a number of conditions of things that Yeshua made that even though you might have thought that such things are also, but we're going to make exceptions in order that a farming society like people have in those days will function more effectively, basically. So this is one of them. So it's not called the Gemara says over there there's 10, but then the Gemara points out there seem to be a couple of others. It ends up saying that a Stam Braitha holds there's only 10. But yes, there are some other Tanoim who hold that there are more. Rabbi Yehuda is one of them. So the Halacha is in fact like Rabbi Yehuda, which is, again, why the Gemara doesn't like the idea that our Mishnah should not be according to Rabbi Yehuda. So anyway, the point is, according to Rabbi Yeshua, on the face of it, you have permission to take from going all the way back to Yeshua, to take your straw and put it out in Rosh Hashanah. Why should you be chayim if somebody slipped on it? The answer is, I feel the tamer of Rabbi Yehuda. Yes, you could even say that the Mishnah goes like Rabbi Yehuda, because Moedet Rabbi Yehuda, Shem Hizik, Mashalom Asher Hizik. Because Rabbi Yehuda Taka agreed, you do have permission to put it out, but if it caused the damage, you're nevertheless chayav for it. Similar to the case of the water before. You have permission during the winter to throw your dirty water out into the street, but if it causes a nezek, you're going to be chayav. Same thing over here. You have permission this time of year to put out your compost, your stuff to become fertilized, but you're still chayav for anything that happens. Tosfos points out, by the way, so then if we're going to say that the Mishnah fits with the Rabbi Yehuda, what do you mean the Kol HaKodem Behem Zacha? The whole point is, Rabbi Yehuda is saying you have the right to put your straw out. What do you mean? Anybody who walks by can take it? That defeats the purpose of you putting it out there.
He's not saying that.
But if we're saying the Mishnah is like Rabbi Yehuda, then the whole thing, that whole part, until Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer would have to be like it. But how does that fit? What do you mean? Kol HaKodem Behem Zacha. So Tosfos answers, Rabbi Yehuda would answer, if we say the Mishnah is according to Rabbi Yehuda, he would say that those words, B'chalakoyd and B'hanzacha, means if you left them there more than 30 days. If you left them more than 30 days, then they're free for all.
Not before.
There are other Mephoshim who make a different distinction. They say, if you put out your straw and it's going to be there for 30 days getting trodden on, sure, you have permission from Yeshua to do that. But if it caused a hezek, Rabbi Yehuda would not only make you chayav for the nezek, he would also say at that point that straw is that kol hakodem behem zacha. Because now at this point, it's already caused a hazard. Somebody's already gotten injured by it. Therefore, at that point, anybody could take it. Yeah. That's how some of the portion learned. Okay. The Gemara says, V'hatsanan, why? What are you telling me, Rabbi Yehuda? You're telling me Rabbi Yehuda would say, even if you had permission to cause a certain hazard, you're chayiv if it actually causes damage? V'hatsanan, but we learn in a Mishnah, the case of the camel with the flax, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer b'nei chanukah, potter m'pnei shor b'rishus. We see over there that Rabbi Yehuda says if the storekeeper had his candle outside and the flax got lit on fire, et cetera, et cetera, the storekeeper is going to be potter because he had permission to have his candle outside, isn't it? There's no reason to on the face of it. There's no reason to distinguish between one of Nezikin and another. My lab Mishum Rishus Beisdin. L'chura, doesn't that mean that he has Rishus from Beisdin to put his candle outside? And therefore we see that Rishus Beisdin is enough to pass through you from any consequences. The answer is Loi Mishum Rishus Mitzvah. No, Rabbi Yehuda, when he says Mitzneshu Rishus, he means that's different. It's not just that Beisdin allowed you to put your candle outside, it's that that wouldn't cover you, we're saying now. However, there's a mitzvah involved, the matter of Pursum and Nissa.
Right.
The whole reason to put the candle outside is Pursum and Nissa. So there, that's different. When it comes to Chanukah, yeah, we're talking about Chanukah now. So therefore, when it comes to putting your scroll out in Rishus Rabim, yes, you have Rishus Beisdin. It's something optional that you can do. But you're not accomplishing a mitzvah by doing that. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda might well say, sure, you have permission from Yeshua and his basin to do it. But the permission didn't extend to that if it caused the hezek that you're going to be potter. On the other hand, when it comes to Rishus Mitzvah, when it comes to I'm putting out my candle, not just because basin gave me permission to, but because that's the optimal way to do the mitzvah, that's different. Rabbi Yehuda would make that distinction. That's what Rabbi Yehuda would argue. And the truth is, actually, the Gemara mentions later on in the sixth parak when we talk about that case, the Gemara is going to mention that actually the Chachamim in principle agree with that idea. They just say the difference is fine. You have a Rishus Mitzvah to put your candle outside, sure, for so many things. But you're also responsible to sit there and guard it and make sure that it doesn't cause any fire to break out.
So walking away would make the fire.
That point's the Chachamim. Whereas the point's the Yehuda, since you had Rishus Mitzvah, then that's the other thing.
When did you read that?
It's later on. It's better. The Gemara's going to mention it when we get to that Mishnah and the Gemara on it. the Tanya as in fact we learned, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a Bener Chanukah Potter of Meshur Hurushus Mitzvah. So in a Braise, Rabbi Yehuda spells it out that when it comes to Ner Chanukah, he's pottering you because of Rushus Mitzvah, not just, in the case of here where it's Rushus based in something optional that you could do.
And the Chachamim does.
The Chachamim, again, might agree with this in the Rushus Mitzvah concept, Mitzvah. But they say that you have to be Yoshev and Meshavar. That doesn't potter you from sitting and guarding.
Damage comes first.
Yeah. Toshma, come, let's try to prove what we're trying to say here, that Rabbi Yehuda is, again, we're saying the Mishnah says that you put out your straw and somebody got injured by it, somebody slipped on it or whatever, and then was damaged, then you chal. We're saying, how does that fit into Rabbi Yehuda saying you're allowed to put out your straw if one of Yeshua's tsnoyim? So we're arguing that maybe he would make a distinction between, okay, you're allowed to put it out, but if it causes a hezek, you're going to be chal. So Toshma, come, let's try to prove a different brayta seems to say different. Any case where the Chachamim said that you're allowed to put a hazard in Rishus Rabim, for example, Rashi says the case that we had earlier on the Amud, where you're allowed to pour out your dirty water during the winter, nevertheless, if it caused a hezek, you are going to be chayav to pay. And but Rabbi Yehuda says you're potter. So you don't even need Rishus Mitzvah to make you potter. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it sounds like even Rishus Beis Din isn't enough. You had permission to put your water over there, therefore you're potter for any consequences. You had permission to put out your straw, you should be potter. Why is the Mishnah implying, if you're going to say the Mishnah is like Rabbi Yehuda, then not implying, the Mishnah is saying straight out. If the Mishnah fits with Rabbi Yehuda, you'd have to be potter. And again, that's hard to say, since the halacha should be like a Stam Mishnah, but the halacha is also like Rabbi Yehuda. Rav Nachman says very simple. Our Mishnah is talking about the time of year when it's not normal to be putting out your compost to turn into fertilizer. Therefore, even Rav Yehuda would agree. You had no permission to put it out that time. Therefore, you're fired. Rav Ashi says, here's a different answer. You know what? When you consider it, the Mishnah is talking about specifically straw or stubble. Before they were turned into fertilizer, while they're still in their raw state, mishum de mesharki, that's different. Those are things that can cause. Those are things because they're hard and because they're smooth and hard, people can easily slip on them. Rabbi Yehuda is saying you're allowed to put out your. Rabbi Ashi is saying like this. Even b'shasar tzach bolit, Rabbi Yehuda would make a distinction between things that people are likely to slip on versus not. You put out zevel, for example. You put out stuff that's already semi-composted, and you just want it to finish the job. Fine, it's not so slippery. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda would say, fine, you had rishus to put that stuff out. Therefore, you putter. But Rabbi Yehuda would agree if he put out something which by nature is slippery, even though you're putting it out for the same reason, you're putting it out in order for it to be composted and become fertilizer. Nevertheless, you would be chayev because that's something that's more likely to cause injury. So you don't have rishus to put that out in the first place.
That's Rav Ashi explaining.
That's why there's not contradiction. There's no contradiction. The Mishnah can be like Rav Yehuda and say that you're chayav for the straw. We have in the Braiser of Yehuda saying you're potter because what you put out was already composted stuff. Two different circumstances. Tosfos points out there's another detail in this also. Now, the Mishnah also mentioned a case where you had a gullah, where you had a piece of animal dung in Rosh Hashanah and somebody was injured by it. L'chora, according to Rabbi Yehuda, shouldn't you say the same thing, that you want it to be composted, you want it to turn into more effective fertilizer? The answer is Tosfos says it's not going to. There's no gain, there's no benefit to be had. The animal dung is already natural fertilizer. It doesn't need to be trodden on by people or animals to become any better fertilizer. Therefore, you have no business putting that out in Rosh Hashanah in the first place. So in other words, it comes out then, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that's the point. It's not something as slippery. It's true, it's not slippery, but on the other hand, you have no reason to put it out there because it's not benefiting. You're not gaining anything from it. So therefore, what it is like this. You're allowed to. So the bottom line is like this. You can put out stuff, the way Rav Ashi is explaining, which is halacha. You're allowed to put out stuff to become compost, to become fertilizer, as long as A, you stand to gain something from it. It's going to be trodden on by people, and therefore it'll become fertilizer. And B, it's not slippery. If it's one or the other, slippery, or if it's not something that you're going to gain anything from people stepping on it, then you're chayav. Then you're chayav. Yes, it's negligent to put it in your shirah. The Mishnah said kol akodim behem zacha, that when you put out straw and somebody slipped on it and got injured, then anybody who comes first and gets it is zochin it. So Amar Rav, bein begufon bein b'shvachon. It means that this person who takes it is allowed to keep it itself as well as the shvach. So again, in the scenario I was mentioning before, he's allowed to take the whole thing home. He doesn't have to reimburse the original owner of the straw at all for the original value.
Even though there was an improvement in the nature of
Whereas the Iri says he's entitled to the Shvach, he's not entitled to the Guf. So you'd have to reimburse the original owner, the original value of the straw. Now, the point is, I mean, the Shvach, the logic to say that everybody agrees that you forfeited the Shvach is because the Shvach is caused by the B'nai Rishos Rabim walking on the straw. Therefore, there's no reason that you, who put it out there illegally in one of the scenarios that we just mentioned, should be entitled to that Shvach. Where's the goof of it? That's what we're arguing, whether he forfeited the goof or not. So, the Maikam Mitzvah, what's the underlying Maikam? Rav Sava comes to goof and Mishum Shvachan. Rav says that we make a knast, we cause him to forfeit the goof together with the Shvach, meaning once he's losing the Shvach, we make him lose the goof as well. Because of the shvach, because you're losing the shvach, because you put it out to have shvach to be improved by people stepping on it, and you put something out in a dangerous way. Therefore, we're constantly you not only you lose the shvach, but you lose the goof as well. Uziri says that we don't make such a claim.
Just the shvach.
Let's look at the Mishnah. It's Nan. We said in the Mishnah, if somebody is moving around a piece of dung in Rosh Hashanah, and somebody else is injured by it, then we say that he's chayev for the nezek. However, we see the Mishnah does not mention anything about kol akodim behem zacha. Now, l'chora, the reason is there's no shvach over there, because it exists already. It's already a golol. It's already useful fertilizer. So you're not saying that he forfeits the golol because it caused the hezek. That's a question on Rav then. Rav is saying that you forfeit the golol. So in other words, for Zairi, it works out very well. You can't say him to lose the shvach. There's no shvach in this case. So there's nothing for him to lose. According to Rav, that he loses the golol as well. Yeah. Okay, the Gemara answers Tanur Leishavu in the Sefer. Fine, you could argue the Mishnah mentioned Kol HaKodim Ben Zacha in the case of the straw, and we're meant to understand that it also applies in the case of the dung. The Mishnah maybe didn't have to repeat itself.
Cannot apply because there's no improvement.
No, you would say, in other words, according to answer the Mishnah according to Rav, you would say in the case of the straw, there's both, there's a goof and there's a shvach, and you lose both. In the case of the golo, there's no shvach, but there is a goof and you lose that. The Mishnah didn't bother repeating itself, that's all. Problem is, Valtani Allah Asur Mishum Gezel. Okay, but we learn a Braisa that spells out that when it says Kol HaKodim Zacha, it says Asur Mishum Gezel. They're also as a matter of Gezel. It would be stealing to take them. So Lachura again, back to Rav. If somebody were to take this Golol, yeah. In the case of the Golol, the Braisa says Asur Mishum Gezel. That if somebody else comes and takes this goal that you were moving around over there, they've committed gezel. You picked it up. You were koinei from Hefker. Therefore, we're saying you become chayev for any nezakim. But now we're saying if somebody else were to take it from you, then it would be gezel. Now, according to Rav, once it caused a hezek, we're causing you to forfeit it. Why would it be gezel then? Somebody else is taking it legally. The answer is kikafani. Asurim mishum gezel. Ask kulam asnitid koy. No, because you could say the asurim mishum gezel is not referring to that specific case where it caused a nezek. It's referring back to the entire Mishnah, meaning laoisish kodem v'zacha. Meaning the Mishnah had said in the case of the straw, the Mishnah had said kol akodim behem zacha. So the Braisa is adding once kol akodim behem zacha. Once somebody else had the right to pick it up and keep it for himself. That if a third person comes and if another person comes and takes it from that one, then he'll have committed an issur of gezel. So Reuben put out the straw, a nezek was caused. Therefore Shimon says, okay, now it's free for the taking. He comes and takes it. If now Levi were to come and take it from Shimon, he's committed gezel. That's all the Braisa is saying.
You could have understood which other way then.
You could have, no, that's the, on the face of it, we're understanding that asur mishum gezel means that Shimon is not allowed to take the stuff. Not in the case of the straw, but in the case of the golo. That's the question. No. In the case of the golo, where the Mishnah did not say, kol akodim behem zacha, The Braisa says Asur Mishum Gedol. So if we assume Asur Mishum Gedol is referring back to Polakonim Ben Zacha, then fine, it works out well according to that. But if you say Asur Mishum Gedol is, when it comes to a Golol, somebody is moving around a Golol or a Shesed Avim, it caused the havoc. Nevertheless, somebody else is not allowed to take it. According to that, why not?
Only when it causes the havoc.
Yeah. The question is, but that's not what the Mishnah and the Braita say. The Tanan, because we're the Tanya, actually, it's supposed to be the Braita. If somebody takes out his straw or his stubble to Rosh Hashanah, stubble or his straw to Rosh Hashanah for fertilizer, and somebody else is injured by it, then you chayev in the nezek. Anybody who grabs the straw or stubble first is zoche in it. So far was the Mishnah. Now continuing the Braita, umutu mishum gezel, and it's mutter as a matter of gezel, it's not feeling to take it. So we see that mutter mishum gezel is another case, another case, if somebody is turning over and moving from one place to another, a golol, a piece of dung in Rosh Hashanah, and somebody else is injured by it, chayev, the one who is moving around the golol is chayev, but also mishum gezel. But it is also to take it as a matter of gezel. So the Braita is clearly distinguishing between the case of Tivnei v'kasha, where anybody can take it and there's no issue of gezel, versus the golol where there is.
Can't you say that Asur Mishum Gezel refers to the initial part of the Braita?
No, because the Braita clearly distinguished the case of Tivnei v'kasha, Kol HaKodim Ben Zacha, Umutu Mishum Gezel. If somebody else takes that Kevin and cash, they're not committing gezel, as opposed to the golol they are. According to Rav, both of them should be Asur. Both of them should be free for the taking.
Right.
Yeah. The answer is Amar of Nachmi, it's a Golol Karamit. What do you think? You can contradict, you can slog up Rav based on the case of dung? Think of it. Chavash Yesh be Shvach, Kansu Gufa Mishum Shvach. What is Rav saying? He's saying that when you have a Shvach and you have a Guf, once you're forfeiting the Shvach, we're also making you forfeit the Guf. In the case of a Golol, there is no Shvach. So, when there's something that has a shvach, we say konsu gufa mishum shvacha. We say once we're making you forfeit the shvach, we're making you forfeit the guf as well. Once you lose the shvach, the added value of the straw by it being trodden on, you're losing the actual straw itself and you don't have to be reimbursed by the other person who takes it.
But you don't lose...
Dover she'en bo shvach, whereas when it comes to a golo, there is no shvach. So it's a forfeit. Therefore, loy konsu. Therefore, there's no reason to think that Rav will counsel you in that case.
And therefore you keep the goof.
So therefore you are entitled to keep the goof. And if somebody else takes it, that would be gezel. Therefore the Braisa, the Mishnah, the Braisa fit very nicely according to Rav then. Nobody else is allowed to take that golo. You found a golo in Rosh Hashanah. You know what you start moving it around because you want to bring it home, let's say, to use for fertilizer. Meanwhile, at some point, you put it temporarily someplace else in Rosh Hashanah and somebody else trips over. You're hired for that net. However, nobody else is then allowed to take that goal. That's the difference. Because there's no shvach in the goal, therefore, or even you yourself put the goal out in the first place.
Why did he make this not also for the goal?
Because there's no shvach to cancel you on, therefore,
they could have made it not without the shvach.
They could have, but the Rav is saying, come to group and mishum shvach. The first owner who left it there is Hefker, let's say, or even we could be talking about the person himself took it out from his property into Rosh Hashanah for whatever reason. I mean, there's no good reason for him to. It's not like it's going to be improved by Rosh Hashanah stepping on it, but whatever. He put it out in there. Somebody else was nizik by it. Now he still hasn't forfeited it yet, though. It still belongs.
It's higher for the nizik.
It's higher for the nizik, but it still belongs.
Because it's a stop. What?
Yeah, he took a golol that belonged to him. I'll say, yeah. Iboilu. The divra I'm a konsu guf and mishum shvach. Fine, let's continue. According to Rav, who says that you lose the guf and you lose the shvach, in the case of straw, meet la'alter kansinin or l'chimaisi shvach kansinin. When do we cancel him and say that he forfeits all of it? Is it right away? Or is it only after the shvach? Develops?
The alter
would mean right away. Or the chimaisi shvacha kansinin. Or do we cancel him when the shvach develops? then at that point, then at that point,
at the same time, otherwise, if it's nothing later on, then it's you cannot say there's wait a minute, there's gay cell. It has to be at the same time.
No, so okay, so Rabbeinu Chananel explains what he catches out. The question is basically like this. So let's say la'alter would mean that la'alter would mean like this. As soon as somebody else takes the straw, he's immediately zoche in it. Now let's say for example it stayed there in the Rishus Rabim for a while, it did get trampled on, and now it has a shlach. So at that point, maybe the person whoever gets a hold of it is zoche in the guf and in the shlach. So what is it? In other words, as soon as the other guy takes it, he's immediately zoche in it, or is he only zoche in it after it was already shvach? Because again, we just established before that when there's no shvach, we don't count for you on the goof.
So therefore, that's
the question. Do we wait until there's a shvach?
Yeah, or
maybe not. It's something that is capable of having a shvach. Eventually, it will develop a shvach.
Didn't say that.
But that's
said as soon as there's a shvach.
No, a gullah will never have a shvach.
A gullah will
never have a shvach.
That's right.
Tevin and Cash will eventually have a shvach.
Right.
That's what we're asking. Have you forfeited it right away, even before the shvach developed? Or maybe not. Maybe only after the shvach developed, you left it in the Shvach for a long time to let it get trampled on, maybe then. Toshma, I mean, to call it a gullah. Fine, you can answer that very simply. You see that when we were discussing the fact that we brought up the question of Golol in the previous discussion. When we mentioned that according to Rav, on the face of it, the case of a Golol is contradiction to him, that implies that it doesn't matter before or after the Shvach. Either way, we assumed that Rav would say you lose it right away. So therefore,
because you brought this case of Golol.
There's no Shvach. So
how
therefore,
can you conclude when there's no Shvach? About Shvach.
Well, that's the answer. The Kizbara, how could you think that? Kiyarin and Golo, we only brought in the question from Golo in the comment, the literature of Nachman. Before, Rav Nachman pointed out the distinction between something that will develop a Shvach and something that won't. The boss of the Shani Rav Nachman, the Ekalamima Golo Klau, after Rav Nachman's answer, there actually was no reason. If we had known that answer in the first place, we wouldn't have brought the question from Golo in the first place. So yes, you can't prove from the fact that question was brought up what Rav would hold in this case, because when there's no Shvach, when there will never be a shvach, he says you don't forfeit it. You don't forfeit the gullah. That still doesn't tell us what happens when there's not a shvach yet, but there's going to be one later.
Right.
Yeah. Right. The Gemara says lema ketanoi. Fine. In that case, can we say that it actually depends on a machloek ketanoi? A brisa says shtar actually the Mishnah and Rav Matia shtar shekosaboy rivis. A shtar that has ribis written in it, so it actually says that a person borrowed and is going to pay with ribis.
You're not allowed,
obviously. We penalize the lender. Rameir says he cannot collect either the principal or the interest.
Wait.
Whereas the Chachamim say he can collect the principal, he just can't collect the interest. Right, so the principle is the equivalent of guf, and the interest is the equivalent of shvach. Lema Rav, Damak Rav Meir, Ziri Damak Rav Banan. On the face of it, then Rav would hold like Rav Meir that you lose everything. Ziri would hold like Rav Banan, you only lose the shvach, in that case the ribis. By the way, before we go further with that, Tosfos points out an important question. We know you're also to have anything to do with a loan that involves interest. These edim signed on a shtar that contains ribbit, how are they kosher to edim? On the face of it, they themselves have committed a serious aveda, and therefore they should be possible edim. So you don't have a valid shtar at all. Tosfos gives a number of answers. One is that they might have been forced into it. Another is that maybe people don't, Tosfos points out an interesting thing, which the Gemara mentioned in a few places, something that people don't necessarily realize is an Aveira is not something that possible aiding. People know you're not allowed to lend an interest. People are not as familiar with the concept that you're not allowed to be an aid on a loan that involves interest. There's an issur. The Torah talks about ribis in three places. There's three places where the Torah talks about the issur of ribis. And the Gemara explains in Bava Metzia, in Perek Ezer Neshach, which is the whole Perek that talks about these dinim, that one of them is addressed to the Malva, you're not allowed to lend at Ribbis. Another one is addressed to the Loiva, you're not allowed to borrow at Ribbis. And the third one is addressed to all the third parties, the Edim, the scribe, the Ore, everybody that they're not allowed to be involved in. Yeah. So therefore, but people don't realize that. People think when the Torah says, you're not allowed, when the Torah talks about the issue of interest, people think in all the places, don't have the Malva. The Malva is not allowed to let that interest. So people don't realize that it's an issue to be an aid on a... So it is an issue, but it's not something they know. Therefore, you can't possible them as aids because of that. Anyway.
It doesn't possible them as aids,
right. Okay, so again...
So the third parties or
the third parties themselves, the agent themselves, are not considered part of the
borrower and the lender.
So the lender is a Russia, or if he ever were to be an aid, right? He's not an aid.
He himself would be
possible as an aid. The loiva, I'm not sure. Maybe not. I don't know.
He might have been desperate. So.
Well, but even still, also
the illegal loan.
Anyway, let's continue. Okay. So anyway, so on the face of it, then Rav is like the mayor, Ziri is like the Rabbanon. Since the halacha is like the Rabbanon, then again, you have a problem with Rav. The answer is we don't know yet that the halacha is like Rav, but how would Rav explain it? He knows the halacha is like a chum against Rav Meir. The answer is Amalach Rav, not the Amri, after the Rabbanon. No, because my opinion over here about the straw could even agree with the Rabbanon. Because Adkan, like Tamar Rabbanon, Hashem, El Keren, Behetera. Because in that case, the Keren, the principle, came about the Heter. You're allowed to lend somebody money and collect the principle. Avalacha, Keren, Gufa, Kamazik. Here, the Keren itself is what caused the damage. Therefore, I have more reason to say that Rabbanon would allow you to collect the principal over there because there's no issue involved in the principal. But here, there was damage caused by the principal. The straw itself,
so
you put it out.
So then was Ribbis,
you
said.
The Ribbis you can't collect, but the Karen itself doesn't involve an issue.
But since it goes together.
That the Chachamim say that you can collect the Karen and not the Ribbis.
But so what are they arguing about? Why wouldn't
Rav Meir says you lose everything, and the Chachamim say you can collect the principal. Now, when it comes, however, Rav would say, yes, the Chachamim say you can collect the principal on such a thing. However, that's where the principle itself does not constitute an Aveira. Here, you put out straw. Here, you put out straw, and somebody slipped on it and got damaged. That itself caused the hazard. That's a different thing.
I agree with you, okay. but how can you say Ribbis is not an Aveira?
Ribbis is an Aveira. The Keren is not an Aveira. The principal is not an Aveira. You're allowed to lend somebody $100 and get back $100. The extra $10 is the Aveira.
Right.
You're allowed to collect $100, that's what I'm saying. And Uziri Omalach Anoda Amri Afil Rav Meir. Conversely, Ziri could say that my opinion even agrees with Rav Meir. Ad kan like Amr Rav Meir Halsim Elad Mishas Siva the Ovidly Truma. No, because the difference is Rav Meir would say, you know why you forfeit the Karen? Because at the very time the Shtar was written, already there was an Isser being done by writing a Shtar that involves Ribbis. So there's an Isser in one of the Isserim of the Torah in connection with Ribbis is Lois Simun Olav Neshech and all the place Neshech on him. As soon as you wrote such a Shtar, you place Neshech on him. You place a situation of Neshech. Therefore, the mayor would cancel you and make you lose everything. But over here, it's not necessarily when you put out straw, it's going to cause a hazard. It may or may not. Therefore, the mayor might be Minkel in that case. Next. Lema Kahani Tanoi. Fine. Can we say the machlokas of Rav and Ziri about the straw? Maybe it's similar to the machlokas of the following Tanoi. The Mishnah said, somebody takes out his stubble or his straw or his stubble to Rishas Rabim to become fertilizer. Somebody else gets injured by it. Chayev in Nisko, the one who put it out is Chayev for the Nesek. Whoever grabbed a hold of the straw first is Zoche in it. Basur and Mishum Gezel. And actually, the Braisa said that it's also for anybody else to take it as Gezel. Reb Shimon Gamliel, Mekal Makalkul and Rishas Rabim. Reb Shimon Gamliel said anybody who caused the hazard in Rishas Rabim, the Hiziku, and it ends up causing damage, Chayev and Lashalem, they're obligated to pay. Anybody who grabs it first is Zoche. Umitor and Mishum Gezel. And they're allowed to be taken. There's no history of Gezel. So, first we have to figure out how Gufa Kasha. In the Tanakama statement, don't you have a contradiction? Amarta, Kol HaKodim Ben Zacha, you're saying whoever grabs the scroll first is entitled to keep it. The Hodakama, Asurin Yishum Gezel. Then you continue, it's also as Gezel. So what do you mean? Are you allowed to take it or not? El Olav HaKodim. Evidently, it must mean the Tanakama comes and says, it's saying, Kol HaKodim Ben Zacha, B'Shvachan, Asurin Yishum Gezel, Agrufa. Anybody who gets a hold of it is entitled to the Shvach of it. However, however, the goof belongs to the original owner, and they're going to have to reimburse the original owner for it. And then Rav Shimon Gamliel comes and says, not just the shvach, you lose the goof as well. So therefore, Rav would be like Rav Shimon Gamliel, and Zeri would be like the Chamin. The Gemara says, Zeri bade tanoi. Fine, according to Zeri, necessarily, we have to say yes. He would have to say, fine, I hold like the Rabbanon. Rav Shimon Gamliel would disagree with my opinion. The Rav milema tanoi. Do we necessarily have to say that it's machlokas tanoim according to Rav? That Rav's opinion only follows one Tanner, Rav Shimon Gamliel. No, because Amalok Rav, because Rav can answer, the Kulei Amo comes to go from Mishum Shvachon. No, even both the Chachamim and Rav Shimon Gamliel might hold that you do in fact come to him. He loses the goof along with the Shvach. Right. The difference is the Halacha Vein Moed came from Mishum. The Machlokas between the Chachamim and Rav Shimon Gamliel would be, yes, this is the technical Halacha. Do you actually paskin to somebody that way who comes to ask about it? This that we're saying, Kontu Gufan, Mishum Shvachan, the Tanakhama might hold that that is technically the halacha. However, if somebody comes and asks, can I take the straw and keep both the Guf and the Shvach, we'll tell him no, that would be gezel. Or if you take it before the Shvach has developed, then you would tell him no, that would be gezel. But if he took it, then fine, he's puzzled. So that would, whereas Rav Shimon Gamliel would say that no, even Murin came. We will even tell him he's allowed to take it off the chilim. Yeah. Rav Ada Ba'ava Omer, Halacha Murin came. No, Rav Ada Ba'ava says that no. Actually, we would say that no, the Halacha is that you do in fact paskin. If somebody comes and says that I want to take it, we will tell him that's the Halacha, you're allowed to take it. Yeah. Question that he says, in other words, that both the Tanakhama and Rav Shimon Gamliel would agree with that. Hey, the question is, Amy, are you telling me that so? According to Rav, that halacha v'ein moedin kain, you wouldn't pask into somebody who comes and asks. V'ha Rav Huna after chushli, but we find that Rav Huna actually paskin, that somebody had put out peeled barley in Rosh Hashanah, and Rav Huna declared it hector and said that chushli is peeled barley. Yeah. Rav Ada Ba'ava after slikusta. And Rav Ada Ba'ava declared slikusta hefker. It actually says two possibilities what slikusta is. One is that after you press dates to make them into beer, you have left the dregs that are the squeezed out dates. That's slikusta. The other is that it means dregs of the beer itself. You have the beer itself, dregs fall to the bottom of the container, and then you can dry them out and use them as animal food. Whatever. Somebody put it out in Rosh Hashanah, and Rav Ada Ba'ava declared it hefker. So if Rav is saying halacha ve'in moren kain, why? The Bishlam of Ada Ba'ava Kishvaite. Fine, Rav Ada Ba'ava followed his shita. He says, Halacha Omerin Kain. El Rav Huna, Lema Hodabe. But Rav Huna reported in the name of Rav Halacha Ben Merin Kain. Should we say Rav Huna changed his mind and decided that he can pass in that way? The answer is no. Hanu Musrin Habu. Because the case of the person with the peeled barley, he had already previously been warned not to do that. He had done this several times and been warned, don't put your barley out in Shisad Abim. It's going to cause a hezek. At that point, Rav Huna says, fine, we can cancel him and take it away from him because he's disobeying the warning. But in a normal case, somebody put it out one time, and all of a sudden there was a hezek, Rav Huna would still say, halacha v'ein moedin. If somebody else comes and asks, can I take them? We won't tell him, go ahead and take them. But if he does, then fine, he hasn't committed yet.
Musrin
means like warned. Malach Nasra.